April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Sexual violence includes any forced, coerced, unwanted sexual contact by an intimate partner, dating partner, spouse, family member, friend, colleague, or stranger. Daya Houston is a nonprofit that provides free and confidential services to victims of sexual violence, whether that violence is current or past.
Correct.
Here with us today is Rachna Khare, Executive Director of Daya. We're so excited
to
have you.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's been a while. Yes. I'm glad to be here.
So how does sexual assault awareness differ within the South Asian community compared to mainstream
Europe? You know, I think it isn't just the South Asian community, but when there are cultural communities, you know, other Asian communities, the Middle Eastern community, but also including the South Asian community, when we're starting from a place where sex, even healthy consensual sex, is such a taboo topic, when you can't even talk about the positives, then it's very difficult to talk about the negatives and harm that people might be facing. Yeah. So I think the biggest difference between sexual violence awareness in our community versus just the broader mainstream Houston community is that we really have to start opening up the conversations so that, you know, when people are being hurt, that they know that there's a safe place to go and that it's okay to talk about it. The silence also keeps people from even learning about sex. And so if they're taught, oh my gosh, this is not something you shouldn't do it, you shouldn't talk about it, you shouldn't even think about it, then if something happens to them, there's so much fear that they're going to get in trouble if they seek help.
Right. So what cultural factors contribute to the underreporting of sexual assault amongst South Asian communities?
Yeah, so one of the things that we're learning as more and more nonprofits that are working on domestic violence in the South Asian community, we are all starting to work closer and closer. We've always worked closely together, but now we're really starting to work closer together on data collection. Okay. And what we're finding is that, you know, the South Asian community reports the same amount, if not more, experiences of domestic violence in their life. You know, 48% of South Asian women have experienced some form of domestic violence
That's
in their life.
Very
it's a very high number.
Yeah.
Now, in Texas, every 68 seconds, somebody is sexually assaulted. So we know that that sexual violence is occurring in our community, right? We know that.
Yeah.
But in these reports, we see that only, 11% of people report sexual assault as one of the forms of violence. I think some of the barriers are, of course, the taboo is number one.
Yeah.
The second one is that there's this, sense of obligation. Again, not just in the South Asian community, but in traditional cultures that where a woman feels like if she's married, then sex just is a part of that.
Yeah.
Or a man may feel like if they're married, sex is just a part of that. Yeah. The reality is that if you're forced or coerced to have sex, whether you're married or not, it really damages your psyche, your psychological self. And it's painful also, physically painful. There are lots of medical issues, gynecological issues that, again, women are not comfortable talking about. It's not something that, our mothers talked about with us because they were carrying the stigma too from, these stigmas carry over the generations.
Yeah.
So there can be a lot of physical pain and psychological harm done when you are forced to have sex with somebody, whether that person is your spouse or not.
Oh,
it's in most cases, it's not a stranger.
Yeah.
80% of the time, a person who is being sexually assaulted knows the person that is perpetrating this assault.
Oh,
80% of the time.
Yeah.
And that's why when people say, oh, well, we heard it from our governor, we'll catch rapists and we'll put them behind bars, and everyone wants to be very, strong criminal justice approach, which is fine.
Yeah.
But when 80% of people, this is your older cousin or your uncle or your boyfriend, the boyfriend you're not supposed to have,
yeah.
or your spouse, yes. the one who you had an arranged yeah. marriage with. I mean, these yeah. things get so complex, and many times it doesn't rise to a criminal
yeah.
finding, but that yeah. doesn't mean that there's not harm happening.
Right.
And then also a lot of new immigrants, South Asian immigrant women especially, are, if they are in an abusive relationship, we all know South Asian women are brilliant and beautiful and strong and capable yeah. of anything.
Yeah.
But when you have this abusive spouse and your immigration status is tied to them, they can also say, not only can you not work, Rachna, you cannot learn English. I'm not going to allow you to go to temple or to mosque or to church to make friends.
Yeah.
No, you can't go on the walk. No, you can only go to the doctor if I'm with you.
Oh.
So this becomes this way that they are controlled. And what it many homes, at you know, it can look like being forced to have sex. It's between having sex or losing your life or being harmed or beat up. I mean, these are very true realities. But really, even in relationships that aren't physically violent, sex is often used as a tool to control that person. And then if they are, you know, if they're not allowed to use birth control, if they're not allowed to say, I don't want to have a baby right yeah. now, it's a way that men can keep control over their wives, because you know, in Texas, you can't even finalize a divorce if you're pregnant, and regardless of what the situation is, you can't finalize a divorce.
Oh, I didn't know.
And so the baby needs to be born and custody and all that.
Oh.
And so by having, if in the worst cases that we've seen, there are women who are being forced to have baby after baby after baby, so that they cannot leave. And then with all these small children, it is really hard to make money. I mean, I don't know. I know very few people who live in a home where only one parent works at this point.
Yes.
It's expensive to do this,
Absolutely.
You know. And so there are lots of ways that sex is used as a broader tool of domestic violence, but also as, this is my power over you. This is what you owe me. And then many times, women and other underrepresented minorities, you know, trans people, gay men, right? It is a stigma to come out and say,
yes.
hey, this is happening to me.
Absolutely. I mean, how are you supposed to report it against your spouse?
That's right.
Right?
And sometimes it doesn't look, I want to be clear. Like, a lot of times people imagine a violent rape. They imagine being, you know, held down and not allowed to scream or something like that. It's often not like that. You know, it's often, oh, if you want to go grocery shopping, well, let's have sex first. And that's code for if you want to eat and exist and live under this roof, this is what you owe me.
That is crazy. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, no, and it's very common. And even if it's not said out loud, there's often this understanding.
Yeah, which I think Asian, like South Asians,
yes.
are so good at, you know.
Yes.
Subtly, but it's there.
Yes, absolutely. Know? There's these, and you know, it's not any. You know, it's often. It's definitely not the victim's fault. And even when you think about the perpetrator who's forcing sex upon people, somebody told that man, right? Somebody, some parents, some media, some cultural norm, they learned that that you are owed sex by your wife or your partner or by any woman, you know?
So how can we bridge the gap between traditional South Asian values and modern discussions surrounding consent and sexual violence?
I mean, it's things like this. It's having these kinds of discussions. But it can't just be, you know, welcome via to the radio and a forum. We've got to be having these discussions, like, with our girlfriends and with our guy friends, with our spouses, with our couple friends. And once we start to get comfortable having the conversation as adults, we really can lean in and start having the conversation with kids too.
Yeah.
And these kids can be of all ages, but even as you're having, you know, grown-up kids, right? Like I'm 42 and Now I talk about these things with my mom, and maybe we talk about it in the context of what's happening in the news or what we see on a movie or what we're seeing in the world and how things feel off and unfair. But instead of just feeling that inside, it's important that we talk about it with people, and especially consent. And I encourage everybody to, have that conversation with your partner, with your spouse, that consent is required each time you have sex. And it's not like this, would you like to have sex? Yes, I consent, right? It is this idea of like building the mood, of bringing romance into it, of telling somebody what to expect, and is it okay, and does this feel good? Those are very important questions that not only guarantee consent, but they actually will make sex better and bring the bond closer together, because you feel, oh, this isn't just some physical thing. This is also an emotional connection that I'm having with this person who respects and loves me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I love how you said that, to have these conversations, because to just open, talk about it still feels so uncomfortable.
Yeah, it totally is.
When you're speaking to your mom and you're speaking about movies and things like
That's the way to do it.
That is such a nice way to begin. For example, I haven't seen the movie Animal, but does that have something to do with consent and things?
Oh,
like that,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So then that was such a big thing, or it's a bad movie, or
right?
Like some people really like
it. Which
movie.
Is.
But I think that's a very good conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This
I love
and
that.
It really happens in rural areas.
Yeah. Well, and it happens everywhere.
It
happens everywhere.
See, that doesn't make it a bad movie, but we can get onto the conversation.
It's an interesting topic for me, because I have talked to a lot of, I think we're all millennials, right? The upper millennials, right? So Gen X and millennials, I think that we grew up with the no means no, right?
Yeah.
How many times did we hear that? No means no, no means no.
And questions asked.
Right.
So you can ask questions.
Yes, just no means no. But the reality is, if you really dig down and talk to your girlfriends, you would be hard pressed to find a woman of our age who has never had sex when she didn't want to.
Yeah.
Because sure, maybe we didn't say no.
Yeah.
But what we're realizing now, what educators and scholars and activists are realizing now, is that no means no. Put that aside.
Yeah.
Yes, duh. No means no.
Yeah.
But it's actually yes means yes.
Yeah.
And so until you have that yes, right? Many times women, and especially in our community, we are told that we are to be more submissive, that we are to that, and in all communities, a loud woman is angry or irrational or hysterical. I don't know about you all, but I'm seeing, and especially on the news and in politics these days, I'm seeing a lot of emotional and irrational men, not women, right?
So
we internalize that. We all internalize that.
Yes.
And instead, we're like, oh, I'm going to be this loud, bold, brash woman, or I'm going to be this quiet woman. And you can be both things. And I think the thing is, if women are taught that they, through media and through society and through culture and through parents and through school, that they are to be the quiet, good girls, how are they to speak up if something is happening to them?
I completely agree, because I think that's still happening, where the girls are being said, oh no, if someone's saying something, you just need to listen.
Absolutely. We're told to ignore, to walk away, to de-escalate. And it's a nuanced conversation. Yes, you have to stay safe.
Yeah.
And so if that means, being really kind until you can walk away, more power to you.
To speak their mind, right?
Yes.
I see that. And then the girls are being said, no, don't speak your mind. That's okay. If they think that, that's fine.
That's right.
And I don't do that with my boys. If they want to speak out to the adults and speak out their mind, as long as they're respectful, that's fine.
Yes, yes.
Because they have to. In this world, if you don't open your mouth, you're going to be left behind.
That's right. And or you could be harmed, right?
Yes,
and that is the biggest problem is, we're not asking everybody to change their personality, and if you're quiet, but you need to know that it's always okay. It's always okay to say how you feel.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, because I grew up in a way that I couldn't always speak how I felt. So when my boys do that, I kind of admire it.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Like, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Because they say exactly, my older one still doesn't, but my younger one is very.
And I'll tell you, it can flip, because I grew up in a home where, my family's going to listen to this and be like, what are you doing on the radio today? I grew up in a home where the women were much more outspoken. My mom is incredibly outspoken, and my dad is really introverted and quiet. And whenever there was conflict, you know, there's conflict in every family, but it was the volume was always from the women in the family, right? And it's three girls and my dad, right? And so, you know, my mom, my sister, me, and my dad. But when I found out, when I started to grow up, I found myself shrinking in more, because I started to think, oh, you know what? We were really like loud, and it was too much, and we were always yelling and this and that, and maybe I should be a less outspoken person, because that's not a good, you know, that can be an irritating personality if you're too outspoken. Mm-hmm. And then I found myself in situations where I'm like, oh, you know, this situation isn't working for me. And why is it still happening? Oh, because I haven't said anything.
Spoken up yet.
Yeah. So it can swing both ways.
Right.
And we should always be encouraging people to speak up and do so respectfully, right? And respectfully doesn't mean, okay, you can have your way.
Yeah.
You know, you got to stand up for yourself, and you have to do it in a way that is respectful of the other person, because that also keeps you safe.
Yeah, and then I love what you said. You can always speak how you feel.
Always.
You know? That,
yeah.
Because I see my 13-year-old sometimes. He's just, and it reminds me of me, because when he's upset, instead of yelling, he'll just start mumbling to himself.
Yeah.
So then, you know, at that time, I'm just like trying.
And there are many, you know, that does, you know, then maybe it's journaling for a little while and then coming and finding you and say, Mom, can I have a conversation?
Maybe I need to suggest that.
But I do think that when we're talking about, we cannot talk about sexual violence until our community can finally one day talk about sex, you know.
Absolutely. So what resources are available specifically tailored to South Asian survivors of sexual assault?
So at DIA, we are so lucky to have counselors and advocates who are open to, they are very open to talking about anything. There's nothing that you can tell this group of advocates that they haven't heard something similar before, right? And I think what that lends itself to is that we have really creative ways to help people heal when it comes to sexual assault. So because most of the time the sexual assault occurs by someone you know, in many cases, clients that come to DIA don't want to go to the police, or maybe this assault happened to them when they were a little girl by an older man in their family. And there is, you know, they don't want to bring all this up in a legal or criminal way. That's okay. We are laser focused on how can that person heal, and what can justice look like to that person.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean that they have a better relationship with their own body? We've started working with a social worker now who does Reiki and inner child work and mind-body healing with survivors of sexual assault, because many times it's very difficult for them to talk about it.
Right.
And many times it's about them feeling more comfortable in their skin again,
right,
reconnecting to their body again, doing movement healing, things that look like healing through the arts or through dance, alongside of, you know, the therapy that they may or may not be getting. We leave it up to the client. And it's very, you know, if they want to bring a spiritual aspect of it. Now, our social worker, you know, we are a non-religious organization, but she's a spiritual person, right? And so she's really about connecting back to your soul and your heart. And so if somebody, you know, again, anyone listening who's ever experienced a sexual assault, and this could be, you may be an adult and have experienced this sexual violence when you were a little child, a little boy or a little girl, any gender. This can happen to any gender. I encourage you to call DIA at 713-981-7645 and talk to somebody and see what's out there for you. We have lots of different, and right now we have special programs that are really focused on people who have experienced sexual assault, whether that is from a family member or somebody that they went on a date with, or, and especially in our community, looking to looking to reach adults who were sexually assaulted as children and have never had the chance to heal from that. Wow. Because it's important. It's never too late.
Yeah, that's amazing. So in what ways can the South Asian community better support survivors and break the silence surrounding sexual violence?
Yeah, I think, you know, the only way to do it is to start breaking the silence. And I think it starts with friends. Yeah. I think that, like, especially a group of girlfriends in our community, and I look at you guys, and y'all are like the epitome of, like, the squad of girlfriends. Taylor Swift can learn from Chai Time Girls.
Oh, man.
But, no, I'm serious. But, no, it's just so beautiful to see y'all's friendship. Mm-hmm. And I know when I look at your pictures or when I hang out with you guys and I see you all together, I can tell how much trust there is. So if we can start, like, not everybody has that, yeah. You know, and so the more you can put yourself out there as a safe person to others, you know, I hope that by being on the show and by all the ways that I've talked to you guys before and after the show, that you know that if anything ever happened to you or somebody you know, that they can always call me,
absolutely.
You know, and so it starts there. You don't, what community members should know is that you don't have to fix it. All you have to do is say, I believe you, I'm not going to tell anyone about this, and I can help you call a place like DIA. I can help you call DIA.
Yeah.
Or do you want to help me draft, I can help you draft an email to DIA. Or if you're not ready to call and talk to somebody right now, okay, you can continue to talk to me, but I'll do the best I can, but all I can do is listen.
Yes.
It's important to not give advice because you would be surprised. Sometimes the advice that we think is like the natural thing, oh, go to the police. Well, what if your abuser, what if the person harming you is connected to that police department?
Yeah.
If they know a police officer, this can put them in more danger.
Right.
Those are the kinds of questions that we ask at DIA, right? We really make sure, okay, what is the risk? And just be, you know, maybe someone's spouse is a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then this means that we have connections into different police departments. We can get your case taken care of through another way that doesn't put you at risk.
Right.
So I would always say that you can always tell your friends, and sometimes I randomly text my friends, my guy friends, my girlfriends, all of them, and say, hey, just a reminder, if you're ever having relationship issues and feeling unsafe, you can always come to me.
Yeah.
Just randomly, every quarter or so, I'll remind them, you know. And that's, I think, the best way we can do it. And then the most important thing is for young people, for you to tell young people, hey, if you ever have any questions about a relationship you're in, just know you can come talk to me, and I'm not going to tell anyone. And then stand by that. You know, if you find out that your friend's teenage daughter is having sex, it doesn't mean you have to tell their parents.
Really?
It really doesn't.
I don't know. I feel like I would be betraying my friends.
You would, but I mean, what would be worse is if you continue to let this child get hurt.
Yeah.
What you can do is help them have that conversation with their mom and be there for that conversation so you can help mediate that a bit.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. You wouldn't be letting them down. They'd be so thankful for you for taking care of their daughter at that time.
Hopefully.
They will. I know your friends.
I'm hoping it's not
another one.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we build that relationship.
Absolutely.
Right?
So it is relationship building and building relationships with your community, because I know we want to think, oh, this is within one home and the four of us as a family.
Yeah.
We have to throw all that away. The problems in the world are too big to be doing it in
absolutely.
A group of four or five, you know? I mean,
yes.
We need to come together in a bigger way and have real, authentic relationships with people.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back after this break. Welcome back, Houston, to Chai Time. We are in conversation with Rachna Khare about sexual violence. So let's get back. Are there any unique challenges faced by the LGBTQ community?
Yes. So funny, I'm nodding as though the radio can see me nod. yes, absolutely. So I think the biggest thing, again, everything comes back to stigma, which is so annoying because I'm like, if we could just end the stigma of everything, we could fix the world. But
right.
I think because especially in our community, LGBTQ folks face a lot of stigma.
Right.
So what we have seen at DIA, the true story multiple times, is that when there is a South Asian, let's say a South Asian gay man, for example, and he may be dating, you know, a white American man.
Okay.
And as part of the abuse, the partner will say, if you go and get help, or if you leave me, I'm going to tell your whole family you're gay. And that may not have been a thing that this person had done yet.
Yes.
So the fear of outing somebody is a big one. And then the other thing that we see so much is that, especially when it's a relationship, actually relationship with two women or two men,
mm-hmm.
what we see is that the sexual violence is minimized. They say, oh, well, it's two men. I mean, that they could just, that both are strong. No one's being overpowered.
Yeah.
This is not true, because there is psychological abuse, there's weapons involved, and because of the emotional abuse, when somebody is controlling you, it doesn't matter. The wife can be controlling the husband, right? You, because you're being so closely controlled, manipulated, abused, you do what they say to just merely stay okay and stay alive.
Yeah.
And so it's nothing to do with, like, who's stronger, you know? We've also seen that in LGBTQ populations, that law enforcement is less likely to intervene. For no, you know, law enforcement will go to the scene of a crime, and their job is to collect evidence, interview both parties, right?
Yeah.
And when it's two men or two women who feel like equally matched in terms of physical strength, they may say, okay, go your separate corners. They're not really trying to take somebody to jail, which is a good thing. It's a, going to jail doesn't really fix this problem, you know? And so it's harder to parse out, like, what actually happened for a police officer who's new to the scene.
Yeah.
The biggest stigma that LGBTQ people face in our community, though, I mean, the biggest challenge is the stigma.
Yeah.
They feel like they are not... So they, even if they're out with their family, then there becomes this pressure to be like, well, I've come out, I'm gay, now I must have the perfect relationship.
Yes.
Because if my relationship has issues, then everyone's going to think, oh, this is indicative of all gay people.
Right.
Or, oh, well, if only he wasn't gay, or if only she wasn't gay. So there is this insane level of pressure mounting on LGBTQ folks in all communities, but especially ours, because you are now all of a sudden the poster child for all LGBTQ people.
Yeah.
You know, there's all this pressure to have a happy relationship because, you know, God forbid you have a problem, because then you're, you know, you're human, you know, or you're not out yet. And then there's that added pressure of isolation, you know, added challenge of isolation.
Yeah.
Many LGBTQ folks also believe that all these rape crisis centers and domestic violence agencies are for women only,
mm-hmm.
or for straight women only,
right.
or for cisgender women, straight women only. This is not the case. You know, I can't speak for every organization out there. I know that there's faith-based organizations, and I know all of this, but I can say with full confidence, places like DIA, any place that is non, you know, not religious, places like the Houston Women Area Center, the Bridge Over Troubled Waters, the Bay Area Turning Point, all of these domestic violence agencies that include DIA, that include places like ADA, Asians Against Domestic Abuse, we are, not only do we not discriminate, but we are welcoming, open, and affirming of LGBTQ people.
Wow.
We understand there are places like the Montrose Center that are, you know, built for the LGBTQ population, but I don't know how many South Asian people they have working there, and I definitely don't know how many South Asian people they have working in their violence prevention department.
Right.
So I'm saying to our LGBTQ community members right now that if you're going through, if you're having a relationship issue, if you're being harmed, if you've ever been sexually assaulted, DIA is there for you. We are there for you. You may see some pink on our flyers. You may see a flower is our, you know, the lotus flower is our logo. So there may be some feminine aspects to our branding. But I will say that not only is it mandated by law that we not turn anyone away, but these are our ethics. These are our values. This is how we live.
Yeah.
And this year we're really trying to reach out more to the LGBTQ population, because we know that I've been told by my LGBTQ friends who are South Asian, we know you, we love you, we love Daya, but it still doesn't feel like it's for us. These are the things that we're trying to improve.
Yeah.
So we're getting lots of training on our staff. We're looking to hire people that better reflect the diversity of the community we live in. And these are big steps that we're taking behind the scenes and on the front end. We'll be at Pride this year. We want the community to know that being South Asian or being a queer person, you don't have to choose one identity. You are both things, and Daya is here for all of you.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, accept you for everything. That's amazing. How can adults in South Asian families be educated about sexual assault to help keep their children safe?
So I know I'm a little bit biased, but I recommend our website as a great, DiaHouston.org, as a great starting point. If you go to it, there's a little tab called Understanding Abuse, and it breaks down, there's little squares of each of the different kinds of abuse, and usually we see abuse happening together. We see physical abuse with sexual abuse. We see it with emotional abuse. You know, it never lives in a vacuum, right? But I think our website is a really easy place to start. You can click on all the different abuse types, and it's just one page. We're not asking you to read, you know, research papers and things like that.
Right.
For parents, I would also recommend a website called loveisrespect.org, and they work specifically on educating parents and teenagers around teen dating violence, which often includes sexual violence.
Yeah.
And those are kind of two places that I would start. I know there's a lot on social media, there's a lot on TikTok. You know, we hear the word boundaries, we hear the word, you know, abuse a lot, and we hear gaslighting. So we're hearing some therapy terms quite a bit. And it's difficult to know, because we're not, I don't think any of us three are therapists, but it's difficult to know if you're not a trained therapist, kind of how to parse that out.
Right.
Our website is meant for the general community. We're not using large words that you're not going to be able to understand. We're not going to ask you to, you know, identify things. It is really, it's very basic on purpose. It's there for everybody to get an idea about what sexual violence is and what it isn't. The biggest thing I hear is that, sexual assault is a rape. You have to be raped.
Mm-hmm.
Not the case, you know, it's not the case. And without getting into the nitty gritty, we could talk for hours about what does rape actually mean, you know, because if we say, oh, rape is vaginal penetration, then you're saying gay men can't get raped, right? And so you have to broaden the conversation, right?
Yeah.
So the other great place to get more information about reproductive issues and sexual assault is Planned Parenthood's website.
Okay.
And I'm not saying you have to support Planned Parenthood. I'm saying that it's a beautiful website to get really wonderfully educated on some of these topics. I would start with the DIA website, and on our website, we link you to different websites where you can learn more.
Thank you for sharing the information.
Yeah, and it's real easy. You can look it on your phone.
Yeah.
It's a quick read, and it'll start to make you think about how have I thought about sexual assault before? How is sexual assault different than sexual violence? What did I think rape was? You know, we all have the image of somebody hiding in the bushes. Again, 80s kids, right? Like, they're hiding in the bushes. They jump out. They, you know, hold you down. We've heard all these things as girls. What were you, you know, wear this, don't wear that, wear your hair like this, put your, you know, all these terrible things. But the fact is, sexual violence usually occurs from somebody you know. And so that is why I really recommend reading on our website about it. There's also a wonderful book by a survivor named Chanel Miller. She was at the heart of that, of the case. I think it was out of, I don't want to say the wrong college, so I won't say which college, but there was a college swimmer.
Mm-hmm.
He was like meant to be like he was going to go to the Olympics, like he was that good.
Mm-hmm.
And he sexually assaulted a young girl.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of discourse against her that she was ruining this poor boy's future.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote a book, and she was unnamed throughout the trial. Her name is Chanel Miller. She wrote a book called Know My Name, and this book has changed my life. It takes you through, the assault is a very small part of this book. it takes you through the whole case. It takes you through how it felt working with a rape counselor, mm-hmm. and how much trust there was there, yeah. and how it felt working with a lawyer and a judge, and what people said about her in the media, and how people stood up for him, and how she felt sorry for him. It's very nuanced. And so that is my recommended reading, yeah. for really understanding that this is not black and white. And that's why, as much as we want to say, yes, we'll put all rapists behind bars,
yeah.
again, it's not a policy that's going to work.
Yeah.
That's not a criminal justice policy, because it's not doable. It's not doable. Where's the evidence? And these people are not hiding in the shadows. They're among us.
Yeah, but then that's what makes it so harder for people to come out and...
Yeah, you don't want to get somebody in trouble.
Yeah, somebody in trouble or go through the whole process, but she did it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And she has said that it was an awful process. And the hardest part was being questioned by people and nobody believing her. It's so easy, I think, to, when you meet somebody or if you know of somebody, and this has happened in our community, right? There have been some prominent people in our South Asian Houston community that have been charged with sexual assault some years back. And I think that it is very easy to just believe a victim.
Yeah.
You know, people say, oh, they're coming, they're doing this for the money. You'd be surprised that how little money is involved in this compared to how much money it takes to pay for a counselor, to get the right therapy. Most therapists aren't taking your medical insurance. Many people don't want to use their medical insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Many times Daya is on a wait list for counseling. Not right now, but sometimes we are on a wait list because that is how many people need help,
right.
and don't have the money.
Right.
So this idea that people make up accusations for money is a bit ludicrous. And the thing about it is, instead of, and a lot of times people are like, oh, what about that guy and his life? And the reality is there are many, many men being sexually assaulted that are staying silent. And so when people say, well, what about the man? Yeah. I say, yeah, what about these men? These men who are being victimized as well.
Right.
This is not just a women's issue.
What role can South Asian media and entertainment play in promoting sexual assault awareness and prevention?
Yeah, so we talked about the movie. I love that. So I think that
there was another movie with Siddharth's wife. What is the name?
You're on a first name basis with him.
Yes. I know, right? First name basis. Yeah. Siddharth Malhotra, Kiara Advani.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see it.
And you must see it. It's a really...
I will.
Where she gets married to this guy, and she cannot, like, have sex with him. I'm whispering it.
Yeah.
And you wonder, like, what's going on, right? So then they go back and show that her parents didn't know she was dating somebody
I
else,
see.
And
okay.
he raped her.
Oh, my
so
gosh.
So how
yeah.
this husband is
yeah.
now supporting her.
Yeah.
You know, and then they take it to the court.
Wow.
So
I will watch that. Yeah. I'll watch
movie.
That.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Like, when you watch it, it's kind of like not a very happy movie.
Yeah.
Sad, but I love the message that they're...
And that's the thing, we need to, when we see movies like this that show the support and show the reality, we need to support those movies. Yes,
state
rape. Yes, yes.
They use that term, so I think they...
That's great. It's wonderful. And that is a great example of building awareness. You know, I'm not imagining Hollywood or Bollywood to change and become, you know, a nonprofit organization, but I think that there is a lot that they can do. So if you're putting out a movie, you know, that has sexual assault in it or is about sexual assault, I've seen this more and more that they have, you know, to... What was the tiger movie? Dev Patel produced it. To Save a Tiger. Yes.
Yeah.
They had, in New York, when the movie came out, they held panel discussions afterwards, right? Because this movie is about a man whose daughter is sexually assaulted.
Oh.
And so instead of just watching the movie... Yes, it was.
Oh.
And so instead of just releasing the movie, having some places that... your movie watchers or TV show watchers can learn more,
yeah.
right? And I see it on TV now, too. At the end of the show, it'll say, to learn more, go to this website.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
you know, I think that's really important. But the most important thing is that we as viewers actually take those steps and do
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that you can't just have fun and yeah. watch a movie and then walk
yeah.
away.
Yeah.
But when there's an opportunity, especially when it comes to sexual violence, that isn't like a, you know, a fun action movie with things blowing up and it's just, you know, Tom Cruise jumping out of buildings or whatever. But when there's an opportunity to really have a discussion around media, I think that we should. And I don't think, you know, media is a profit-based business, and that's totally fine.
Yeah.
But the reality is sexual violence and domestic violence, it kills our economy. You know, it costs the economy $8.3 billion a year,
wow.
just in America,
yeah, yeah.
from lost days, from medical costs, from all these things. So I would challenge for-profit companies and media to try to take actions to build awareness and end this kind of violence, because it's helping their bottom line as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How can South Asian religious and cultural institutions be engaged in promoting conversations about sexual consent and respect?
So as a, you know, the very loudly, I guess, non-religious person, I have learned so much about South Asian religions through my time at Daya. And I've seen such incredible things. I've seen, you know, there was this imam who, no, not last year, 2 years ago, and he continues to do it. Every October for Domestic Violence Awareness Month, he holds one of his talks is about, I don't know if they call it a sermon, I'm sorry, but one of their talks that the imam does is about domestic violence,
oh, wow.
is about healthy relationships.
Yeah.
That's incredibly brave.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
you are in a position of power, if you have a stage in front of you, how can you, and maybe you can't talk about sexual violence or
yeah.
domestic violence, because
yeah.
maybe you're talking about Diwali, right?
Yeah.
And so that's not, it doesn't seem
yeah.
like it's a good fit.
Yeah.
But it actually is, right? We think about the festival of lights, and what else can we light up? The fact that there's healthy relationships, and we should try to be the light in each other's lives, right? So there's always a way to bring in healthy, safe families. And so I encourage, the fact of the matter is, people, especially isolated victims, one of the few places they're allowed to go to is their religious institutions.
Yeah.
And if there are faith leaders, and whether that person is, you know, the imam or the priest or the pundit, or whether it's somebody who plays a leadership role, right, in the faith community, I encourage you to be open and available to people and to look out for red flags. If somebody seems withdrawn, if they seem depressed, if they seem isolated, and of course, if you see bruises or anything on them, to pull them aside alone and see if there's something that they need help with. And we, of course, you always have Daya's number. You know, a quick Google search would give any faith leader that, or they can just Google Houston Area Women's Center or the Bridge Over Troubled Waters. There's no shortage of agencies in Houston that are willing to help. In Houston, we're very lucky. There's some rural places that only have one or none agencies that can help.
Yeah.
And in the Texas government right now is cutting a lot of funding for rape crisis centers, for domestic violence agencies. So our community has to take a bigger role in this.
Absolutely. What steps can be taken to address the stigma associated with seeking help for sexual assault within the South Asian community?
I don't know. You know, it's so baffling to me. I think about this stigma all the time. We have these, in our community, we have these like big weddings, and you're like celebrating, and it's days and days, and all these
yeah.
traditions. And, you know, there's this idea of like the wedding night and whatnot. It's like we don't have, we're willing to get into people's business quite a bit. You know, we have a lot of like the aunties and the uncles and the younger folks who are, you know, TMI and asking too many questions. I don't know why this isn't one of the questions that we can add to that list. So if you are one of those people that likes to get into people's business and ask a lot of questions, I would add this question to your list. You know, ask somebody about the health of their relationship, how their relationship is going, if they need any help, that you're there for them. I think a lot of times people mean really well, but they just don't know how to ask the question. It's really hard. I think it's got to start with the people you know and trust, because otherwise people aren't going to want to answer the question. And so, but you'd be surprised. A lot of people who really need help, they've never been asked, do you need help?
Yeah.
And so even as a stranger, even if a not a stranger, but like an acquaintance says, do you need help? They'll open up to you. Mm-hmm. So if you see the red flags, do the brave thing and break the stigma and do so in private, because then if it's awkward, there's no one there to see you be awkward.
Yeah.
And if you are right and there is a problem, most importantly, that person's safe now.
Yeah, absolutely. How can allies outside of the South Asian community support efforts to combat sexual assault and promote awareness within the community?
Yeah, you know, everybody across the country is celebrating Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and it's all the domestic violence agencies and police departments and courts, but it's really it really has to include more of the community. So when we talk about allies outside of the South Asian community, I see it, right? I see it at restaurants and stores and shops that have little brochures for different agencies that can help. I would say our South Asian business leaders can invite, Daya to drop off some flyers at their business that can be there so that when people are shopping, they can pick them up. So it can be something really passive like that. But it can also be, you just told me about that movie, right?
Yeah.
So it can be just little things, inviting people to watch things and that can show how healthy love can look. And also, so it doesn't always have to be scary and sad. It can also be really fun and happy. I saw a clip of The Rock on the Drew Barrymore show. I think it's from a couple of days ago. You guys should Google it. So if you Google The Rock, Drew Barrymore, consent. Okay. It's wonderful.
Okay.
I won't give it away. This will be my little thing.
Yeah.
I will encourage you all to, it's like a 40-second video.
Yeah.
And it's not about, it's very family friendly. It's not about sex at all.
Okay.
But if you Google The Rock, consent, Drew Barrymore, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. And I encourage you to share that too with your friends. Show it to your kids too.
Absolutely.
It's a good one.
Yeah. I can't believe it's gone by so fast.
And is there sun? There's still no sun.
No sun.
It's okay.
I guess so. We're expecting darkness.
Yeah.
Darkness
is
coming.
Time,
yeah.
Right? Between
12 and 3.
12 and 3? 2:20.
Oh. Okay. It's got shorter.
Yeah.
Okay.
It got shorter. Yeah. It was longer. So, yeah. Good luck.
Either way, enjoy our gloomy, getting gloomier day. I love a gloomy day, personally.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I do.
I look forward to the sun.
I like it.
Okay.
I'm not, we get enough sun in the summer. I love this. So.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And letting me talk about things so openly here.
It was so enlightening, the conversation.
Yeah, and don't forget to Google The Rock, Drew Barrymore, consent. Yeah.
Thank you, listeners, so much for your time. You all have a wonderful rest of Monday. I hope you all get to see the eclipse, and we'll see you same time, same place. Bye-bye.